The topic of today's discussion is the eye and the heart doctrines. Where does this originate from? This topic, where does it originate from? From what idea does this come from? It comes from universal tradition across all nations and cultures and religions that there is a hidden spirit within all scriptures. There is a hidden esoteric Gupta Vidya, and then there is an outer covering around it. Universal tradition. There is a universal tradition. If we see in the Mundaka Upanishad, this is very clearly illustrated. Now, the great householder Shaunaka goes to the great sage Angiras and asks him some very nice questions, and let's see what the sage Angiras says. To him he said, "Those who know Brahman speak, as the tradition goes, of two kinds of knowledge. One should know of the higher knowledge and the lower, para, apara." Then he goes on to say what is apara vidya and what is seen as para vidya. He says, of these two, lower knowledge consists of Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda and Atharva Veda, phonetics, ritual, grammar, etymology, meter and the science of the stars and their motions. That is Shiksha, Kalpo, Vyakaranam, Niruktam, Chando, Jyotishyam, Iti. These are all Rigveda, Samaveda, Atharva. All these are lower knowledge, sage Angiras says. And the higher knowledge is that by which is known that non-decaying aksharam, aksharam adhigamyate. So there is a higher knowledge beyond the revealed Vedas, beyond the exoteric scriptures. There is something behind it, you may see, a hidden spirit. Among the Jewish traditions, this is also mentioned. They speak of Merkava. Merkava is the outer body, the chariot, the vehicle. But inside the vehicle there is Kabbalah, hidden spirit, esoteric knowledge, Gupta Vidya. So there is the outer covering, which we may say the upper Vidya, and then there is the inner, hidden, Paravidya. And does not Jesus say the same thing in the Gospel according to Saint Matthew? We find these verses where he clearly says that for the general masses, he speaks in parables because they cannot understand the hidden truth yet. His disciples, those who are worthy of the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, he gives a hidden teaching. You know, in Gospel according to Saint Matthew, 13th chapter, verse 10, it begins, "And the disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest unto them in parables?" He assured and said unto them, "Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away even what he hath." We'll see what is the meaning of this later in our discussion. "Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand," he says. So clearly even here we see that there is a revealed teaching and a hidden teaching. And do we not see this reflected in the Sufi traditions? There is general Islam, and Sufism is seen as the arcane, hidden, esoteric, spiritual aspect of Islam. And of course, in the Buddhist, just like we read in the Voice of the Silence reading, there is doctrine which is given for the masses, because that doctrine is said to have originated from the head of the Buddha. And then there is the heart doctrine, esoteric, hidden, spiritual, that is given to those who prepare themselves and become worthy of receiving those teachings, his disciples. So from this comes the topic of our today's discussion, the eye and the heart doctrines. And a little study of, comparative study of the religions, from this angle, from this view, shows us that all the religious differences among the religions and intra-religion, the various sects, various denominations, all of these separate views of the one truth arise because they cling to the eye doctrine, exoteric. For example, even in Christian sects, online an article says that there are 41,000 denominations among Christians, 41,000 denominations. So many sects in Islam, so many schools of thought among Hindus, and so on. So all these disputes and differences arise because of clinging to the external and forgetting or not recognizing the internal hidden spiritual. So what an inquirer ought to do is to seek this hidden spiritual aspect within the scriptures, reading between the words, seeking the hidden spirit between the outer body of scriptures. The usual mistake that is done is confusing great oratorial power or great control over language and grammar and thorough intellectual understanding of the scriptures to be true knowledge. That's a mistake. This reminds one of the Socratic response which we find in Plato's dialogue, the Phaedrus, where Phaedrus goes to Socrates and says, Socrates, have you read this? Have you read that? Do you know about this mythology? Do you know about that? Socrates silently says to the effect that, Phaedrus, I'm sorry, I do not know all these things, because as the Delphic oracle said, I haven't even known myself. Then it appears ridiculous to me to run after this and that and the other thing and other far-flung subjects, he says. That's the response of Socrates. Knowing oneself, know thyself. And Shankaracharya, in his work Bhajagovindam, we find that nahi nahi rakshate dukrankarne. Dukrankarne is grammar, language. And all these intellectual gymnastics that we confuse to be true knowledge. He says that is not what saves. And he says in the Viveka Chudamani very clearly that what will actually save us is knowledge of the self. Viveka. He says, let one read the Shastras, sacrifice to gods, perform karmas, or meditate on divinities. Liberation will not arise even after hundreds of Brahmakalpas without knowledge of the unity of Atman. Unity of Atman, unity of Self. This gives us a hint as to how to reach towards that heart doctrine which lies within the exoteric scriptures. So he lays emphasis on that spiritual aspect. not on the external language, grammar and so on. He says, he defines Viveka, which he asks students to develop within themselves. He defines it as Nitya Nitya Vastu Viveka, which means Viveka is that which, that discrimination, discernment between the eternal and the non-eternal, between what is real and what is unreal. There is a very nice verse in The Voice of the Silence which says, the dharma of the I is embodiment of the external and the non-existing. The dharma of the heart is the embodiment of Bodhi, the permanent and everlasting. So what one must seek is the dharma of the heart, which comes through development of Viveka within oneself. It cannot be given to us. One has to develop that inner discernment, discrimination. And we all know this story mentioned in Chandogya Upanishad, wonderful story of Uddhalaka and his son Shvetaketu. So Uddhalaka sends his son Shvetaketu to study and to get to know how to service the eternal. He sends him forth when Shvetaketu is 12 years old. He says, Shvetaketu, go, learn the service of the eternal, for no one dear of our family is an unlearned nominal worshipper. He says, don't become a nominal worshipper. Go, learn the service of the eternal. How to serve the eternal? Go, do that, he says. So going when he was 12 years old, that is Shvetaketu, he returned when he was 24 years old, 12 years of study he does. He had learned all the teachings but was conceited, vain of his learning and proud. So Uddhalaka recognizes that in his son and calls him forth and says, Shvetaketu, you are conceited, vain of your learning and proud, dear. But have you asked for that teaching through which the unheard is heard, the unthought is thought, the unknown is known? So Shvetaketu doesn't know that because he has learned all the external things, not the internal. Eye doctrine, not the heart. And he says, what sort of teaching is that, master? Said he. So look at the response that Uddhalaka gives. Just as, dear, by a single piece of clay, anything made of clay may be known, for the difference is only one of words and names, and the real thing is that it is of clay. Or just as, dear, by one jewel of gold, anything made of gold may be known, for the difference is only one of words and names, and the real is that it is gold. Or just as, dear, by a single knife blade, anything made of iron may be known, for the difference is only one of words and names, and the real that it is iron. Just like that is the teaching that makes the unknown known. That is the heart doctrine. That is the heart doctrine. And that is what must be sought by us, not getting caught in this web of words and names, eye doctrine. And the greatest hope of humanity lies in the fact that that heart doctrine, that heart light and capacity, the ability to develop that heart light, to open the petals of the heart and let that light shine, that capacity is there within each one of us, each one of us. Does not Krishna give that assurance? Let me try to get that verse from probably the 10th chapter. He says, I am the origin of all. All things proceed from me. Believing me to be thus, the wise gifted with spiritual wisdom worship me. Gifted with spiritual wisdom worship me. Their very hearts and minds are in me, enlightening one another and constantly speaking of me. They are full of enjoyment and satisfaction. to them, thus always devoted to me, who worship me with love, I give that mental devotion by which they come to me. And look at what he says next. For them do I, out of my compassion, standing within their heart, destroy the darkness which springs from ignorance by the brilliant lamp of spiritual discernment. So if we are able to fulfill the conditions necessary, which Krishna so clearly enumerates in the Gita, then he promises that when we mean Krishna, it's not some person, it's the real self, Atman. So that light begins to shine within us. That light begins to shine within us. That's the promise. And therein lies the greatest hope of humanity. Because it means that there is no spiritual authority outside. There is no dependence on any person or personage outside. But each one has the inherent, innate capacity to, you know, burn that lamp of spiritual discernment in one's own heart. And when that is recognized, when this unity is recognized, you know, that state is very nicely described by one Sufi sage. He says that when this is done, when this unity is recognized, then all the differences fall away. The differences arise because we cling to eye doctrines. When the heart doctrine is sought after and found to whatever degree, then differences begin to gradually fall away. He says, I and you are but the lattices in the niches of a lamp through which the one light shines. I and you are the veil between heaven and earth. Lift this veil and you will see no longer the bond of sects and creeds. When I and you do not exist, what is mosque, what is synagogue, what is the temple of fire? The whole distinctions of you between oneself and the others and between oneself and the highest divinity is destroyed, then where is the question of caste, creed, color, and all these differences? So perceiving that unity of Atman, as Shankara says, is the key. And this again strengthens the fact that we are not original sinners, as is taught in some theological doctrines. Neither are we product of animal evolution. We did not arise from animals. We are inherently divine. Krishna says in 15th chapter that it is a portion of himself being the supreme self, which assumes life in this body, draws forth the senses, experiences. Who is that experiences within all of us? It is the supreme self, and we are that, not this body, not this senses. The brain, mind, senses, all these are not the channels of knowledge. The knowledge that we can gather from the brain and the senses belongs to the I doctrine, embodiment of the external, the non-existing. For example, Jacob Böhme, 16th century German mystic, he was unlettered, he was a shoemaker. He did not have any formal education. He was a great mystic. Where did knowledge come from? If knowledge comes only through exercise of mind, the brain and the senses, and through education, external education, then how did such innumerable cases, we find such in the history of India, innumerable. I'm just taking the example of Jacob Böhme. How did that happen? Because the source of knowledge, the means of acquiring knowledge, is not outside, it's within oneself. Within oneself. In fact, it is said, no knowledge can come from outside, no real knowledge. only confusion comes from outside. Vadiya Jai says, turbulence comes from outside, tranquility comes from within. And we were studying in the Friendly Philosophers that senses are the channels through which desires flow to torment oneself and others. So it is not through senses and the brain and the mind, the lower mind, that this heart doctrine can be sought. And so, higher faculties in man, brain, mind, but there is something beyond that, there is a whole world beyond that in man. And it is those senses, those faculties, those powers which have to be developed. There is a key of Buddha, wherein Buddha is contemplating a tree, and then an inquirer comes. He says, I have heard a lot about you. They say that you are a god. Are you a god? He says, I am not a god. Then are you a mendicant? He says, I am not mendicant. Then are you a healer? I am not a healer. So what are you? The response of Buddha is that I am awake. I am awake. So, shows us that Buddha is one, as we saw in the Voice of the Silence, that he is one who has become aware of his heart wisdom and who is able to exercise that higher faculties, the higher moral and spiritual faculties in him. He has reached that moral and spiritual perfection. Which is why the Jainas, in the Jaina philosophy, they say that in every stone there is an arhant slumbering. Which means in the tiniest of the atoms there is a potentiality of the highest spiritual perfection. How much so should it be in man who is a highly developed being? He is in fact omniscient and omnipresent or omnipotent. Inherently we are all sparks of divinity with omniscience in us. So if this is the case, then why are we not able to use it? Why are we not even aware of it? There is this allegory of Mara. Mara is said to be a deep who is the king of the Maras, and it seems he has a crown in which there is a jewel, and the jewel is so dazzling that whoever looks at this jewel, he is blinded by it, bewitched, his senses is bewitched, it blinds his mind. So Mara in the Buddhist philosophy represents that personified temptation, the temptations of senses, of our mind immersed in the body and its surroundings. And we are all caught up in that blindness of that radiance of Mara's crown jewel. Therefore we see only differences. Therefore we perceive only I doctrine. The reason is we are in the dominion of Mara, this demon, the demon of our lower personal tendencies and temptations. It is because of that that we are not able to perceive the hidden spirit. Whether it is a hidden spirit in the scriptures or the hidden spirit within oneself. As the second chapter of the Gita shows that there is a downward course, a downward course. If you are inclined towards the senses, then passion arises in you. He says, he who attended to the inclination of the senses in them had a concern. From this concern is created passion. From passion, anger. From anger is produced delusion. From delusion, a loss of memory. From loss of memory, loss of discrimination. From loss of discrimination, loss of all. So we see here that if we give in to senses and its temptations, it is finally lead us to perdition. Therefore, if we see in the ancient scriptures, for example in Mahabharata, that self-restraint was seen as the highest duty of man. Self-restraint is the highest duty of man. Because the mind is constantly changing. Constantly it's in turbulence. Because that's the character of mind is such that, the characteristic of mind is such that it gets modified. Vritti. Chitta vritti. By anything that it comes in contact with, whether external or internal. Internal emotions, feelings, thoughts, desires, as well as external objects that we perceive through the five senses, instantly modified by it. And in order to reach true knowledge, that modifications must be stopped, controlled, paused. Which is why true yoga begins with ethical injunctions. For us to control the mind, not only is practice necessary, constant practice, but ethics, yama, as we find in the yoga aphorisms. And if the mind is constantly modified through external impressions and objects, then we remain in the dominion of I doctrine, the embodiment of external and non-existing. But if we control the senses, control the mind, and then place it upon what is true, the unity of Atman, as Shankara says, then true knowledge begins to dawn within us. Here we see the rationale for following ethics. When the teachers say, all universal, all teachers, injunctions of the stress upon ethics, it is seen as mere sentiment. But it is not sentimental what the teachers say, they're stressing upon ethics and asking us to put it into practice. It is not sentimental. It is based on a thorough understanding of the laws of mind and the laws of the soul. You know, there is physical sciences. A physician, he prescribes certain things when there is a disease. He gives, because he is aware of the laws of the physical health and hygiene. When he prescribes a medicine, there is a certain rationale behind it. Similarly, when the teachers ask us to follow these ethical injunctions of satya, ahimsa and so on, there is it stems from a thorough understanding of the inner planes of man, its laws, its rules, and the health, hygiene and the harmony of the moral and spiritual nature of man. Based on that, the ethics naturally spring out. It is not written by someone, it's a natural laws of nature, the laws of nature. Just like physical health, hygiene is not there because doctor wrote it, but it is part of nature itself. Similarly, these ethics are what takes us towards health and harmony of the inner spiritual man. So, this process is a very gradual process. Very gradual process. Lord Buddha says that purification of the mind, which is necessary, is as long drawn and as tedious as emptying an ocean with the blade of a kusa grass. How difficult it is and how time consuming it is to empty an ocean with a kusa grass. Similarly is purification of the mind such a long drawn process. Incarnation after incarnation, one must constantly put oneself in this practice. The reason why this is said is that patience is required. It doesn't come by just because the practice is one day, 1 year, 10 years or so. But there is gradual improvement that we see within oneself. So we come to the topic as to how to develop this heart light. How do we develop this heart light? Now we saw that I and the heart doctrine. And then the importance of the heart doctrine. How do we develop that heart light which will allow us to perceive the truth in the midst of what is unreal? See, just like there is the eye doctrine and the heart doctrine, the exoteric and the esoteric, the Merkava and the Kabbalah, the Aparavidya and the Paravidya, just like there are these two things, so also in man there are two aspects. This must be understood. The Vedantins call it as the Jiva Dasha and the Atma Dasha. The Jiva Dasha is when that condition of us, when the mind is bound, it is deluded, it is embodied. But there is always that in us, always that in us which is unbound, free and omniscient. We must first recognize that self within us, if we have to recognize the heart doctrine in the external scriptures. First is recognition of the reality within oneself, the permanent self within the impermanent body, the senses, the brain and the external circumstances. There is always that witness in us which sees all the things, which notes all the things, which is unaffected, which bridges the gap between waking, sleeping and deep sleep, and which bridges the gap between the many lives that we have led till now and also the many lives that we will be leading. That is the Sutratman, like a thread which on which there are different precious jewels which are strung, which unites them all. So also is our real self, our real identity, that which is beyond names and words, as Uddhalaka says. So then it takes us to the question, how do we recognize this true self? Where do we begin? Now, if we study the scriptures, we find that if the self is one, if the self is true, eternal, then it has to be in all beings. It has to be in all beings. And that's where we begin, which takes us to the first ethical injunction of charity, brotherhood, universal brotherhood. See, again we see here universal brotherhood is not merely some sentimental thing, but is based on the very fact of human nature. It goes to the very root of our existence. Krishna gives us the conditions as to how to reach this heart wisdom. He says, seek this wisdom by doing service. First thing is doing service. Why is that? Service of what? Service of the real self, which means service of the all, the welfare of all. Because the self is one. As long as we cling to the personal, separate self idea, so long we will be in the dominion and domain of eye doctrine, which is only differences, which perceives only external, non-existent. But the dharma of heart means this, doing service by strong search, by questions and by humility. And if this is done, what happens? The wise who see the truth will communicate it unto thee, and knowing which, thou shalt never again fall into error, O son of Bharata. Unfailing guide. And he further says in the same chapter, when he is perfected in this devotion, devotion to the true self reflected in all beings, then spiritual knowledge springs up spontaneously in himself, he says. Why is that? Because he is moving away from that which masks the truth, that which hides the truth. What is it that hides the truth from us? It is our idea of personal self, personal, individual, separate self. So gradually he begins to move away from that idea of separateness and he begins to see the truth. And see, look at the bodily differences. All of us are bodily different. Differences in body, differences in our emotions and so on. But internally, there is only one spirit which illumines all of us. Similarly, also in the scriptures, there are many, many, many differences, but all arising and illumined by one's spirit, one truth. And by seeking this knowledge, that one esoteric doctrine, we understand that it is the same as, which means seeking the true self is the same as seeking the true teachings, same as seeking the true teachers. Seeking any one of them will automatically mean that we will be seeking the other two also. We cannot seek the true self without seeking the true teachings and coming under the view of the true teachers. Seeking the true teachers would mean that we are already in the path of our devotion towards the true self and have come in touch with the true teachings. And studying the true teachings will lead us to our true self and the true teachers. The true teachers who teach this wisdom should not be sought outside. Verse of the Silence gives a clear warning that the wise ones tarry not in the pleasure ground of senses. The wise ones heed not the sweet-tongued voices of illusion. These wise ones have to be sought deep within our heart, the hall of wisdom, as the Voice of the Silence says. A certain hall of wisdom. And once we first take their teachings, study it, even if it means intellectually, hypothetically, study it, theoretically, understand it, and then put it into practice, not merely study and live it. Then we remain in the domain of I doctrine. Putting it into practice is what will open up that heart doctrine. Just consider a couple of verses from the Mundaka Upanishad and its teachings to the student. It says, take the Upanishadic bow, the mighty weapon. Place upon it an arrow sharp-edged by meditation. Bend the bow by mind absorbed in that, and hit the target friend, the imperishable. So here we see in this analogy that the teachings of the teachers is the bow, sharpened by meditation, that's the arrow. Bending the bow by mind, absorbed in that. What is that? Our real self, universal self. Which means, in practice, it means universal brotherhood, charity, kindness, forgiveness. Bend the bow by mind, absorbed in that, and hit the target friend, the imperishable. The imperishable akshara, which we first, aksharam adhigamyate, which is the higher knowledge, paravidya. True self is true knowledge, and hitting that is what we ought to do.